Welcome to the UK Investor Magazine podcast, the latest on shares, markets and investments, now available on your Amazon Alexa.
AIM-listed Pathos Communications has recently reported an encouraging trading update, beating estimates and showing a near 16% rise in annual revenues. It's been boosting earnings as it continues to scale its AI-driven strategy. It's also just completed a strategic partnership with Flippr, the world's biggest M&A marketplace, which has 1.6 million registered members. Welcome to this podcast with me, Jeremy Naylor, at UK Investor Magazine. We're talking now to the Chief Executive of Pathos Communications, Omar Hamdi. Omar, it's great to catch up with you. This is an interesting AI story. Let's go first of all with the growth drivers, if we can. Explain what's been behind the accelerated numbers you recently released.
Our customers love us. It's as simple as that, Jeremy. Pathos is in a really, really interesting space where it's using technology to take PR to a market it's never been taken to before. And that market is the global SME market, which is the vast majority of businesses in the world. The deeper we go into the market, and we're still just scratching the surface, we've got 6,000 clients and there are 400 million SMEs in the world. But the deeper we go into the market, the more we're welcomed by open arms. And the more we develop our technology, the better our processes and our business development and our delivery gets. So we're just scratching the surface and we're a very ambitious company.
You listed back on the AIM market back in mid-December last year. But if you wind the clock back further from that, you can see quite obviously there's been a track record of growth and also the business is cash generative. Where do you go from here? I mean, can you continue to add the sort of income increase that you've had, the turnover increase that you've had?
Well, you know, the interesting thing, Jeremy, is if you look at the history of the business, 16% top line growth is actually quite gentle. Yeah. Compared to what we've done in the past. Yeah. So, you know, last year, the Financial Times FT 1000 ranked us as the 33rd fastest growing business in Europe of any type. And their rankings for the coming year are being released on the 3rd of March. So it's all embargoed up until then. So watch that space. So we've been actually quite prudent and quite conservative in the forecast that we've put out. We're absolutely committed to just consistently under-promising and over-delivering. So for us, you know, growing at 16% is, we're always aiming for more. And it's a big enough market for us to, I believe, achieve that.
Yeah, I was going to ask how large the total addressable market is for your services. You've explained how many SMEs there are out there. But in terms of total income, what are we looking at? What are you up against in terms of opportunity?
It's a huge opportunity. And that's the only thing we're up against is just finding efficient routes to get our product in front of the market. The market loves it. You know, it's not a particularly long-winded or difficult sales process. Our sales team usually onboard a client after two or three meetings, quite often within days of their initial contact with us, because our technology allows us to really target things and really put the right opportunities in front of the right businesses at the right time. And we're not really up against anything other than that. There are no significant or serious competitors. The PR industry has seemed oblivious to the massive SME opportunity that it has. And of course, the PR establishment is very focused on larger customers that can afford big retainers and big expense budgets. And technology is not at the core of how the PR industry really operates. So big opportunity for us, especially now with the platform we have being listed in London.
I want to talk more about the technology in just a minute, but just quickly go back to the basic principles of what you're trying to achieve here as a PR company. I think everybody knows what a PR company, generally speaking, does in terms of opportunity for small companies that might otherwise necessarily see opportunity out there. But what do you do for ABC company? What would you do if someone came to you and said, I want PR services?
Well, the first thing we do is we look at everything there is in the public domain about ABC company and see what there is that's newsworthy about that business. Because you've got to remember here, this is a two-sided transaction. On the one side, you've got our client who wants to be in the news, but on the other side, you've got news publishers who are very enthusiastic about our model, very enthusiastic about how we support journalism through our sub-brand, Pathos Publishing, but it has to be newsworthy. They are not in the business of publishing puff pieces. Now, within a matter of days, we would be in a position where we've shown already pre-drafted content to ABC company. ABC company have fact-checked it, approved it. Our content team have put the finishing touches to it, and we've got it published. And that's when the magic really begins for ABC company, because that's when our ROI team, our return on investment team, can really sit down with them and coach them on how to use that media coverage to deliver on their business objectives. So this is really something that can help a business grow and can help a business develop. And what we do is it's really quite unique. You know, it's the number one reaction we have from prospects is, really, you can do this for me? We don't typically have the reaction of, oh, well, you know, there are 20 other firms offering me exactly the same thing, because generally there aren't.
We'll talk about your USP in just a minute. How do you prioritize geographic markets and sector segments within that huge universe that you see that's out there?
For the last few years, we've focused on the low-hanging fruit. And the low-hanging fruit in PR, certainly in the SME space, is the United States. So more than 90% of our revenue comes from North America. And I don't think there's anything wrong with a growing business wanting to grow efficiently and profitably to focus on the low-hanging fruit. However, we want all the fruit. So we are very proud that we have customers in 89 countries. And it's very important for us that we have that diversified revenue. We don't have the sort of customer concentration or geographic concentration that PR agencies suffer from. And one of the things we look forward to doing at the right time is going a little bit more aggressively into two big markets that we're quite excited about, mainland China and Latin America. And you know, we already have a good suite of clients and case studies and testimonials in those two markets. And we have Spanish-speaking clients, we have Mandarin language and Cantonese language testimonials that people can watch. So there's a lot more to do, and it's an opportunity that we're very excited about delivering on over the coming year.
Okay, let's get back to that USP. Walk us through the development and commercialization plan for your AI products and how you use AI to give you a distinguishing brand.
So we have two AI products that we've built. These are proprietary tools built on our data that we've developed over the years. So this is not a ChatGPT wrapper, as people sometimes call some of the alleged AI startup. The two tools are Pathos Mind, which is a stack of AI agents that we've developed. If you imagine that there was an employee who had attended every single meeting, had read every single email, and had listened in on every single phone call Pathos has ever done, that's Pathos Mind. So it's a very, very valuable employee. And then we have the virtual publicist, Priscilla. She's the one I'm most excited about. And that's really a virtual employee that we use internally. We chat to her on WhatsApp. We ask her for help in, you know, generating or refining content. But the really exciting thing for me is getting to the point when we can actually share Priscilla with the world, getting those tools to what we call general availability. And just to paint a picture there, we've had conversations with 370,000 prospects. So those are 370,000 SMEs who over the years have expressed interest in PR for their business. I'm really looking forward to the day when we can say to all 370,000 of them, and it'll be more by then, they're growing every day. I'm looking forward to saying to them, you now have a full-time publicist. She's called Priscilla. She will attend your meeting. She will monitor your social media. She'll read 50,000 news sources every day, and she's got a perfect memory. And we're going to give her to you for free, because we know that when you want her to actually get something published, she'll need help from her human colleague here at Pathos. So it really, really transformational. And we're making a lot of progress already this year in getting those tools from where they are now, being helpful internal proof of concepts, to being ready for general availability, we hope, by the end of this year.
Do you hold or plan to secure IP rights on your AI technologies? These sound very powerful tools. And I guess that there's a lot of PR agencies out there that would like to have this sort of advantage.
IP is very much at the core of our business, and we are a relatively IP-rich business. We own all of the underlying data that has made these tools possible, and we also own the code of those tools. And ultimately, we own the prospect relationships and the customer relationships and the ecosystem around that, including the ability to actually get articles published, which Priscilla couldn't do on her own if she wasn't part of an established business. So we're very, very IP rich, and we'll continue to protect that IP. And that is something clearly quite...
What do you do about staff numbers? How do you keep your costs down? Clearly, it sounds like you are aiming to expand and expand quite fast. Are you taking on a lot of staff, or are you able to bring this business onto the books without increasing your costs too much?
It's the latter. We're not increasing the cost too much. I'm a big fan of human. I think humans are going to be around for a long time. I think humans are one of the real assets of Pathos. One of the things I'm most proud of in the business is the culture that we have, the entrepreneurial team, the quality of our management, from the team leads who have five or six people on their team up to our board. We've got very, very high quality management and a great entrepreneurial culture. The great thing about what the technology does is we don't need to hire specialists with niche experience. So we're about 60, 70 people at the moment. Out of those 60, 70 people, one of them has prior experience in PR. So I don't want anyone listening to this to imagine a PR agency, you know, staffed by these bookish ex-journalists. You know, you look at the CVs of our team and it's, you know, we've got everything you can imagine, you know, ex-pilots, ex-hospitality staff, got one former police officer. Really, you know, we've got a big pool of labor to recruit from, and we don't need to recruit people with, you know, very expensive niche expertise at all. It's just not that kind of business, because the technology allows our staff to do the job that those bookish ex-journalists would do, even if our staff are not bookish ex-journalists.
I think it can be seen, actually, the way you're moving here with this latest strategic partnership you announced a couple of days ago with Flippa, the world's biggest M&A marketplace, Flippa.com. What's behind this tie-up? Explain more about what you want to achieve out of this deal.
So first of all, Flippa is the market leader, as you say, biggest M&A platform in the world, 1.6 million users. And obviously, that's a big number. You can do the maths on what you can do with 1.6 million users. We are really keen to develop strategic partnerships with people who are on parallel or complementary missions to us. So Flippa described themselves as M&A for the 99%. The M&A establishment, the investment banking establishment, is there for usually quite mature company. You know, unless a transaction is of a certain size, it just doesn't make sense to hire an elite banking team and a corporate finance team. So Flippa are democratizing M&A for SME globally. We're doing exactly the same thing, but instead of democratizing M&A, we're democratizing PR. So there's a really, really perfect fit there. And it's something our management team has been working on for almost 2 years alongside Flippa's CEO and his team. The other thing is, M&A is a very strong use case for PR. If you've got a small business or a startup or even a sort of lifestyle business that you're looking to sell, that's the perfect time to start to get some media coverage talking about how great your business is. So it's a perfect fit. And I think you can see from what the Flippa CEO said when we announced this partnership, that, you know, they are as excited about it as we are, and they're looking at really threading our product through their customer journey. And I'm working personally along with my team on getting more and more of those big transformational partnerships that can, you know, in one fell swoop, get a big chunk of the market into our ecosystem.
Just want to look at the way you structured this deal. It doesn't seem like you've paid any money for entering this deal. Certainly it wasn't mentioned in the RNS that was released. What is the structure of it? How is it a short period of working with the company? You've got an open-ended contract. What's the deal?
So it's not about Flippa making money. So we don't have a revenue share with Flippa. Flippa want to add value to their members. And I think that's why it's such a successful platform. They put a lot of work into finding the best service providers that can really add value to their users. So alongside us are people like the US neobank Mercury, people like Seed Legals. You know, they're also in that sort of this invite-only select group of partners. So we haven't paid to be part of this partnership. We don't have an agreement to pay anything in future to be part of this partnership, because it's a real partnership. In real partnerships, it's not about people paying. And I think there is a huge amount of value that we can deliver to Flickr's users. And the view is, and the plan is, of course, that they will then become ongoing customers of ours. If you're trying to sell a business, you get a bit of media, maybe you then get a taste of it, you want a little bit more media to get the deal over the line, then maybe the person who buys the business or the company that buys the business want to announce the acquisition, make sure they're communicating with stakeholders, and then they want to use media coverage to accelerate the growth of the business that they've just acquired. So I think there's a lot of value for both sides.
Just wanted to ask you as well about the outlook for more partnerships or maybe acquisitions. When you IPO'd, I think you raised something like around about £5.5 million, didn't you? Have you started to eat into this? Is this something you're looking to use to get more expansionary agreements or some sort of acquisitions under your belt?
So strategic partnerships is something we're working on every day, and there's a good pipeline there. And as soon as there's anything specific and confirmed, of course, we'll be announcing that to the market very promptly. Acquisitions, we are absolutely open to acquisitions, and we expect, if you look at our forecasts, to be significantly cash generative. And that's a good way to reinvest some of that cash, to get some complementary businesses and really accelerate the growth of the business. So it's something we're very, very open to. At the same time, this isn't an agency roll-up. It's not as if we're going to be, you know, announcing an acquisition every other month. It needs to make sense financially. Ideally, it needs to be accretive. It's something that's very much on our radar. And, you know, the great thing about being listed is already there are companies that we've got long relationships with, whether they're people we've worked with, whether they're suppliers, and they've already started saying to me, Omar, we would love to be part of a listed business. Wink, wink. So very, very exciting pipeline there. And, you know, we want to get the company moving and growing as quickly as possible. So I wouldn't be surprised at all if in the short or medium term there were some acquisition.
Okay, well, we've had an idea now as to how the business operates and where you're moving. And as we said, Pathos has been historically cash generative at the operating level. What's the timeline to consistent net profitability?
I'd have to refer your listeners to our forecast. I don't want to speak out of turn, but we are very positive about the future of the business. You should have invited the CFO, Jeremy.
There's an opportunity to catch up with the CFO at some future occasion. Just very quickly, one of the things you've been talking about has been international expansion. There is regulatory compliance with going into other markets and so forth. Privacy laws, there's data laws impacting AI and media operations across the markets. Is this a bit of a headwind, or are you able to skirt around this somehow?
You can't skirt around data privacy laws, but you can just take them very seriously and make sure you've got a culture of compliance, which we have for, you know, many, many years. You know, we've got quite a sophisticated marketing and data-led operation that has matured naturally over the last several years. And data privacy and compliance has been absolutely at the core of. Otherwise, I don't think we'd still be here, frankly, in Jeremy. And, you know, we looked at some of the key market that we're most excited about, and it seems very, very viable, though no concerns.
Just one final question has to be about shareholder value. Clearly, with a listed company, there's always risks, of course, but when you've got a company that's doing what you're doing, and obviously with value being added, what do you say to people that might be sort of dancing around the idea of investing money? In terms of answering questions like shareholder value, shareholder returns, what maybe investors should expect in terms of benefits of holding shares in Pathos Communications?
I think the most important thing I'd say to potential and existing shareholders is we were very, very prudent going into the IPO. The valuation is very, very sensible, and it remained very, very sensible, as it should be. As it should be. We don't want to be overpriced, and we'd rather be perfectly priced, but we'd rather be underpriced than overpriced. And I think that's just the product of the history of the business. You know, up until the 15th of December, I was the sole beneficial shareholder of the business. So there was absolutely no pressure from existing investors that they were in love with a particular valuation. They didn't want to mark down their investments. Absolutely no pressure. The only thing that mattered was putting the business on a strong footing so we can benefit from that public platform and keep growing and hopefully grow even faster and really build a sizable business that can be an enduring business or maybe even a generational business. So that gave us the benefit of coming to market with really a very, very sensible, very, very fair valuation. the kind of valuation. And I'd be happy if my mum bought shares at that kind of valuation. That's what they say. The valuation has to be good enough that you'd be okay if your family bought shares. And I don't like, as far as I know, my family don't own any. So that's the first thing. We have an overpromise. Our forecasts are very prudent. We have very, very good shots at just consistently over-delivering, which is what every shareholder wants. Shareholders like surprises. They just only like good surprises. And we're set up in a way that I think we've got a really good shot at just having a steady streak of good surprises. And I think a lot of businesses, perhaps when they come to market, don't have. They might have existing investors who are married to a particular valuation. Then, you know, that nudges up the forecasts to being, you know, maybe a little bit too optimistic. And then it's almost like some companies, some great companies, it's almost like they're being set up to fail. Yeah, we're very grateful to not have that. So yeah, there's a lot of upside.
Okay, well, look, we look forward to talking to you again at some point. But you're also the finance director as well, to get an insight into what's happening on the balance sheet. And looking forward to some interesting numbers in May when you report your full year figures. But Omar, thanks indeed for joining us.
Thanks, Jeremy.
That's the Chief Executive of Pathos Communications, Omar Hamdi.
We hope you enjoyed listening to the UK Investor Magazine podcast. Please do share the podcast, and we really value any reviews and comments you leave us in your chosen podcast player. The views presented by the hosts and guests of the UK Investor Magazine podcast are in no way investment advice, and please remember, all investment involves risk.